If then you have been raised up with Christ, keep seeking the things above, where Christ is, seated at the right hand of God. Set your mind on the things above, not the things that are on earth. For you have died and your life is hidden with Christ in God. And when Christ, who is our life, is revealed, then you also will be revealed with him in glory. Colossians chapter 3, verses 1 through 4. It's the theme of our study in the evening lessons, seeking the things above. Appreciate so much the presence of each of you tonight. We have been having good crowds each service. For that, I am thankful to God. For people that are interested in studying His Word and worshiping God, gathering to encourage each other, we thank you so much for each of you that you've come to worship and to honor God. Again, I'm thankful for the opportunity. I am humbled by the opportunity to preach the truth, and I hope and pray and solicit your prayers that I might do just that. I came here to edify you, not to petrify you. I hope that in the time that we spend, I know a few of you have mentioned about bringing a sandwich. Maybe it's been a little long or something, and even an elder wanting to know if my battery had run out yet, you know, in this thing here. So I preach a little long, and I do that intentionally, so the local guy looks really good. And Steve asked me to do that, and he's a good buddy, and I'm trying to help him out. But the lessons that I have chosen, I hope I have chosen well to talk to you about things that you can take home with you, take home and make application, help you to live better, to do better, and serve the Lord from your heart. So my mind, several of the song leaders have asked me, what are you going to talk about Thursday night? What are you going to talk about Tuesday morning? You know, what they've been asking me, and I appreciate that. And just about every time I've said, I don't know. Because I really do, for me personally, I love being a part of a group, listening to you, visiting with you, and in preaching and teaching, I get the vibe from you, and it's just really good for me. As I go through the week, I've got a number of things picked out, but there are some things that I choose would be better than maybe another in my judgment. So this is what I've chosen to talk about tonight. If you have your Bibles, why don't you turn to the book of Luke, chapter 15. Luke chapter 15. And I think this is probably one of the more familiar stories to all of us on all levels, from our little ones, what they study in Bible classes, to adults. And I'm going to say that far as our practical application lesson about seeking things above, this lesson, this story, is a plethora of things that are very applicable to our theme. And I'm going to try my best as we study through this and look at this to point those kinds of things out to us. Again, it's a very simple story. It's my guess is all of us are well familiar with this. I know some of my preacher buddies, they don't like preaching stories that everybody knows, but I really do enjoy preaching stories that everybody knows. It's edifying and it's encouraging, because as you follow along and you know the story, it helps to be able to make the practical application. It's easier for you to see the application when you know the story. And I hope and pray that you know it well enough tonight to make the applications. We're going to read the text, then we'll go back and make some comments. Luke chapter 15 and verse 11. And he said, a certain man had two sons. And the younger of them said to his father, Father, give me the share of the estate that falls to me. And he divided his wealth between them. Not many days later, the younger son gathered everything together and went on a journey into a distant country, and there he squandered his estate with loose living. Now when he had spent everything, a severe famine occurred in that country, and he began to be in need. And he went and attached himself to one of the citizens of that country, and he sent him into his fields to feed swine. And he was longing to fill his stomach with the pods that the swine were eating. No one was giving anything to him. When he came to his senses, he said, How many of my father's hired men have more than enough bread, but I am dying here with hunger? I will get up and go to my father, and I will say to him, Father, I have sinned against heaven and in your sight. I'm no longer worthy to be called your son. Make me as one of your hired men. And he got up and came to his father. While he was still a long way off, his father saw him, felt compassion, and ran and embraced him and kissed him. And the son said to him, Father, I have sinned against heaven and in your sight. I am no longer worthy to be called your son. The father said to his slaves, Quickly, bring out the best robe and put it on him, and put a ring on his hand and sandals on his feet, and bring the fatted calf, kill it, and let us eat and be merry. For this son of mine was dead and has come to life again. He was lost and has been found. And they began to be merry. And his older son was in the field. Came and approached the house. He heard music and dancing. He summoned one of the servants and began inquiring what these things might be. And he said to him, Your brother has come, and your father has killed the fatted calf because he is receiving back safe and sound. But he became angry and was not willing to go in. His father came out and began entreating him. But he answered and said to his father, Look, For so many years I have been serving you, and I have never neglected a commandment of yours, yet you have never given me a kid that I might be merry with my friends. But when this son of yours came, who has devoured your wealth with harlots, you killed the fatted calf for him. And he said to him, My child, you have always been with me, and all that is mine is yours. We had to be merry. For his brother, for this brother of yours, was dead and begun to live. He was lost and found. When we consider this story, I think there is some context that we need to pay attention to. In fact, the reason I'm preaching this lesson. The context of the parable is in verse 2. Now all the tax gatherers and sinners were coming near him to listen to him. And both the Pharisees and the scribes began to grumble, saying, This man receives sinners and eats with them. When you study the life of Christ, you have to notice that the Jews are always on him about something. They're challenging him. They don't like him, it's obvious. They wished he'd go away. They want to kill him. They hate him so bad. But each and every time as he preaches, as he teaches, as he performs miracles, He shows them up. He exposes their hypocrisy. He is so great as the master respondent to answer their questions, to answer their quibbles. And when he speaks to them and he answers them, he just makes them look foolish. His love and devotion to the lost was unquestioned. And as he has observed, receives sinners and eats with them. That was true. But they couldn't stand it. Why? Well, they didn't have anything to do with sinners. These Jews were so pious. They were so way above everybody. They thought themselves to be better than anybody. They believed themselves to be the children of God. They believed themselves to be the people of God. And these sinners, they were nobodies. So Jesus, in this instance, tells three parables. He talks about the lost sheep. He talks about the lost coin. And he talks about the lost sons. And I believe all three of those parables are connected to this one basic concept. The Pharisees and the scribes began to grumble, saying, "This man receives sinners and eats with them." And then he tells them these stories. I think there is some lessons we can learn from this. Let's review just briefly this text. French calls this the pearl and crown of all the parables. And it, when you read it, it's simple to read. It's very vivid. You can picture in your mind the whole story as you read it. Very vivid. And as we look at this story, it has three main characters. It has a loving father, which obviously represents Jehovah God. There is a lost son and an unforgiving brother. Now, as we go through the story, I think the lost son is going to become obvious as to who he represents, and the unforgiving brother, who he represents. Let's go through the story, and we know it well enough. Maybe you've already figured it out. But if you haven't figured it out, it'll be good for us to go through it and see if you come to the same conclusion that I come to about who they represent. Well, when we consider this story, the prodigal leaves his father, as verses 11 through 13 says. Now, this younger son, he does not wait for the death of his father. He goes to his father and he wants his part of the inheritance before his father dies. That was inappropriate. That was the wrong thing to do. But his father gives him what he asks for. And because he's the youngest son, he winds up with a third. Because the oldest gets a double portion, so you divide up everything from that particular aspect, the younger gets a third. So he then takes all of this money, and he leaves and he squanders his inheritance. He is a prodigal. He is a wasteful man. He takes and blows his money. My father, as I was growing up, I would have little jobs from in the house with my mother, you know, running the vacuum cleaner, which was every day. And then, mowing the grass outside and get paid a little bit for that, you know, and I'd save up in my piggy bank, you know. And actually, I had a little globe that was metal and put it in that. But anyway, had money, and I was saving that. And I tell you, I just couldn't wait to get enough money to go get some firecrackers. Now, they were illegal in Kentucky, right? But we, from time to time, would go to Tennessee or Indiana. And I needed to have some money so I could buy them there and come back and blow them up in Kentucky, where that was illegal too. And my dad used to say to me, "Boy, you need to save your money. You need to quit blowing it." And there was a double meaning there. Well, I did buy a lot of firecrackers, and me and all of the other hoodlums in our neighborhood, we shot a lot of firecrackers, we stuffed mailboxes, we put M80s in them, and those mailboxes would go like this, and at night, the fireball, that was so cool, and then we found out it was a federal offense. to destroy mailboxes. We had illegal firecrackers, shooting them off, blowing up mailboxes. We were bound for prison. That is for sure. So my dad said, "You're just blowing your money, son. You need to save your money." I understand what this guy did. Just blow it. Right? But you notice in the text, he squandered it, but the text says, with loose living. And what is interesting there when we consider that idea of loose living, a form of that word is used over in the book of 1 Peter chapter 4 and in verse 4. And in that particular text, the verbiage there is, "And in all this, they are surprised that you do not run with them in the same excess or overflowing of dissipation or riot." And that's our word. And that contextually is the idea of being riotous or living ungodly. Now, you'll recall in the text that later the older son says that he blew it on harlots. I don't know if that's true, but he blew his money and he was living it up and he was partying. The text says that he loses everything. He has nothing left. He really did blow it. It's all gone. Nothing. He doesn't even have any money to be able to buy any food. And it's an interesting thing here that as parents we try to teach our kids that sometimes, you know, people are our friends because of what we have and what we're willing to give them. And when whatever we're giving them is gone, then the friends are not around. That's what this text is saying. He had plenty of friends when he had money. He ran out of money. He's got no friends. He's got nobody that he blew money on. And I don't know why I keep thinking about Johnny Manziel, you know, the Mr. Football. But it's just kind of this, you know, this guy's got a lot of money. He's just going hog wild and pig crazy and living this wild life, you know. It'll catch up with him sooner or later. It caught up with this man, too. And he finds himself feeding the hogs. I think we would understand this young man to be a Jew. He's in a foreign country, one of the Gentiles. And hogs were considered by Jews to be unclean. But he gets him a job feeding hogs. We call that like slopping the hogs. Right? And as he's out there with the hogs, he thinks as if, you know, he's so hungry and about to die that maybe he's going to eat some of the pig slop. Now, the actual term that is used there is the pods. And the pods are a garden variety kind of a green bean kind of thing that they fed, evidently at this time, the hogs with. But I remember as a young boy going to the farm, several of my family members were farmers, and one particular family member had hogs. They raised hogs. And as a young boy, I thought hogs were cool because you go out there, and they're big, and they're grunting, you know, and they're ugly as all get out, and they're out there playing in the mud. I mean, we love playing in the mud, too, you know. And these hogs are just rooting around and rolling around in the mud, you know, and stuff like that. But when my uncle would feed them, he had this big old bucket, you know, and it was, they called it slop. And it was full of everything that was left over from a lot of meals. Okay? And they would throw just anything, in it, you know, watermelon rinds, you know, just all kinds of stuff. Right? And he would keep it outside and he would keep it, you know, getting it filled up. And, you know, in the summertime, you know, flies and maggots and all that. It was pretty cool looking stuff in there. It was just nasty and it was cool. And
So he come out, and I want to make sure I watch him when he slopped the hogs. He grabbed that bucket, you know, and he go out there. Shoo, 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 shoo. Boy, those old hogs would come running up there to the slop trough, and he'd take that old bucket, you know, and just, and those old hogs would already have their heads in the trough before the slop got in the trough. And he didn't say, move your head, piggy. He just poured it all over them. There's those old pigs with their heads in the trough and the slop just running off their ears and all. I thought that was so cool. And they just eating this stuff and grunting and everything. And I'm going to tell you what, as a young boy, I thought that was so cool, but I never thought it was so cool that I wanted to reach down there and get a bite. I didn't do that. Sometimes you could see almost a half a biscuit laying in there. Never did get it out. But the whole time I was standing there watching all that, thinking it was so cool, I wasn't hungry. I wasn't starving. Thankful to God that I was never that hungry to eat the pig slop. Not to mention, pigs are not your nicest smelling critters. They stink. They smell like pigs. And you notice in this text that the scripture says, and he came to his senses. And what is interesting, that word in 1 Corinthians chapter 15 is talking about sober-mindedness. You know, sometimes you can eat some really, really hot sauce. And what does it do? Oh, man, you can breathe out your ears now. I mean, it just opens up everything, right? All right? When you smell a really rank polecat, man, that just opens up everything. You wide awake and aware now, right? You know, the verbiage that's there is that this man had been totally out of his mind. He was drunk with his lust and passions to do whatever he wanted to. And he blew every dime on stuff that didn't amount to nothing. Now he's standing with the pigs, starving to death, thinking he might just go ahead and eat some pig slop. But the smell, the scene, the place, and the time brought him to his senses. I just want to say that God has a way of getting our attention sometimes. Sometimes when brethren, when people just totally ignore God and just go off half crazy and just do whatever they want to do, and what they wind up, they're so far away from God, and they're so intoxicated in their hearts and minds with the world and their lusts, that they have to literally hit the bottom in order to wake up. This old boy hit the bottom. And it woke him up. And he starts thinking the way he ought to think. I've messed up. He got to thinking about his home. He got to thinking about his dad. He got to thinking about the servants at home, that they had it better off than he had it. So he comes to the right conclusion. He says, I'm going to go to my father, and this is what I'm going to say to him. Father, I have sinned against heaven and in your sight. I'm no longer worthy to be called your son. Just make me as a hired servant. Now let me tell you, there is a young man that was so full of himself and so intoxicated with worldliness. And when he hit rock bottom, he was blessed that when he hit, he didn't die. God blessed him. One more chance. There are a lot of people that blow their last chance. This young man went back to his father. And the thing that is so touching about this story is that this father shows compassion to this son. Me, the father, and my son does this. What's the first thing I'm going to say? I see him coming. Obviously, no shoes, tattered, looking awful. First thing I'm going to say, when he's blowed a third of my wealth, all $14, he's boned it all. I'm going to say to him, boy, I told you that you would be good for nothing, and I knew you was good for nothing, and you still ain't good for nothing. I told you. There ain't one I told you in there. This father was compassionate. He was looking for this boy. Now, according to cultural habits and times of that day, men of substance, men of renown, they didn't run. They were dignified in that they walked around very eloquently. This father ran to his son. When he saw him afar off, he was looking for him. He ran to his son. He never said, I told you so. He hugged him. He fell up on his neck. This scene is just the most touching thing that you could possibly understand about God the Father and a sinner. Those Jews had to be sitting there and listening to this, and they had to be squirming. They had to know who this young boy represented. And who did he represent? Sinners. The very ones that they disdain. Yet what does the Father do? Sees him with open arms. And when we look at this story, the son is sort of right in the middle of his confession and saying to his father what he had practiced and what he has determined he was going to say, and his father interrupts him. He doesn't get to say it all. He didn't get to say the part about the, you know, just hire me as a servant. You know, don't treat me as a son anymore. I'm not worthy anymore. But his father forgives him and he restores the relationship. And notice the text that he get the best robe, something of honor, put a ring on his hand, some authority, and put sandals on his feet. You know, slave servants didn't wear shoes. This is my son. Put some shoes on him. It seems that even though he's blowed everything, and the son even recognizes, I'm not even worthy to be your son anymore. Father says, you're my son. You're back home. And the father is so happy that his son has returned. You know, if that was all of the story, that would be an awesome story, wouldn't it? There'd be so much for us to learn about that, about God and us. But there's another son, which, in my judgment, this was the real point of the story. He said all that other to get to this point. The unforgiving brother. He's out in the field and he's working. He hears all the commotion. He asks, what's going on? Servant says, your brother's come home. Now, from the older brother perspective, if you've got siblings, especially younger siblings, I have a sister who's 12 years younger than me. My parents, when I was at home, I thought they were the cruelest parents. They were the toughest parents. They were, you know, I was like being in prison And, you know, they just treated me really, I thought, unfairly. Then this sweet little Petunias came along 12 years later, and she got away with everything. She, you know, she was just, it was disgusting. And I remember having conversations. I've done away from home and married. And seeing the way they, I would remind my parents, do you all remember when I was at home and when I did that? I still got scars. See right here? Okay, there's just something there about siblings when it comes to some of these kinds of things that we don't like it. Now, here's this guy. He's still out in the fields working. His brother has gone off on a long, crazy adventure. Now he's come home, and Dad is accepting him right in, you know, like everything's cool. And this older brother, he just loses it. He loses it. The text says, but I'm going to come back to that in a second. In verse 28, he became angry and was not willing to go in. What does that mean? He got angry, was not willing to go in. He was pouting. He was angry. He was upset, but he's pouting. You know, his little brother's getting all the attention again. And he even goes on and argues with his father. Look, I've worked all of these years serving you. Look how perfect I've been. Look of all the things that I've done. You've never thrown me a party. You've never killed the kid for me. You never let me come over and celebrate with my friends. Don't you feel sorry for this old guy? I mean, he's just work. He's been so perfect and so good. Let me tell you, his attitude lets you know that he hadn't been as perfect as he claims he has been. Now you see the real guy. Let me tell you, that happens with people. People may appear to be these really good people, but when you put them under a little pressure, you put them in a situation that really doesn't suit them or they don't like it, then the real person, Jack in the Box, comes out. Now you see what they really are. This guy claimed to be a great son. He was awful. Someone has said, who is the prodigal after all? One came back, but one got lost at home. He locked himself out of the banquet. And the key that was lost was love. Well, he was angry. He was pouting. He was self-righteous. He was jealous. He was hateful. He was angry. Verse 30, but when this son of yours... My wife and I have that kind of conversation back when our kids were home. You know, one of them would act up, and whoever caught them would say to the other parent, your son did this. Now, when they did something good, well, look what my son did. Look what my daughter did. What this son said? Look what your son did. He refused to call him his brother. But in verse 32, the father replies, we had to be merry and rejoice for this brother of yours. The father has to plead with the older son to forgive the younger. Now, contextually, what sense does that make? What were the Jews fussing about? Jesus is eating with the sinners. The pious ones, the brother that had remained home, the brother that was working so hard and so perfect. He didn't like it because Jesus was showing attention to the sinners. The older brother didn't love his younger brother at all. Let me tell you, that is a difficult thing to admit. Do we not all have a loving Father? We do. But have you ever been like the younger son? You know, sometimes I hear someone that has been out in the world put Christ to such an open shame and come back to the Father and try to get their life back on track, only to hear them say, there are members of that church that won't have anything to do with him or her, as if he has some kind of leprosy or disease or something. Let me tell you, we might have all experienced that, witnessed that from one of those two sides of the fence. There may be some of us who have never, ever left our Father, gone into the world. We can't understand. We can't even begin to fathom the idea of anybody just going and blowing their spiritual wealth and just becoming a complete heathen. We don't comprehend that. And when they do come back, when they come back and truly try to make their lives right with the Lord and try to do the right thing, today there are still people that look down their noses. They look the other way. They are not accepted. They're not appreciated or cared for because they're tainted and they're sinners. And we are the children of God because we have never done that. This is not just a story to those Jews. It applies to us as well. You ever wasted time and talents and opportunities and precious life? You know, you're going to wake up one of these days and you're going to be 60 years old. And you're going to start to survey your life and you're going to say, man, I blew it. I'm 60 years old, been a member of the church for 40 years. I can't even teach a Bible class. I've never brought anybody to Jesus Christ. I haven't even been able to keep my notes clean. I've just been involved in so many things and done so many things and just really have brought shame upon the Lord. And here I am 60 years old. My life, somebody talked about, living to be 80 years old and comparing it to a football game, the first and second quarter and the third quarter and fourth quarter. You know, you get in the 60s, you're in the fourth quarter, baby. You're in the fourth quarter. You start to think about that a little bit. People get to thinking, you know what? I've blown three quarters. I got to make up something here. I've got to start getting with it. But if you're that person that has blown it and wasted all of this, there just might be a whole bunch of brethren that know what you've wasted and know what you've done, and they don't want you to play ball with them no more. What about the older son? Do we hate sin or the sinner? That is not that easy to divide. We see somebody do something wrong. You know, all those people that got killed in London. There's a couple of ways of looking at that, isn't it? Well, they were at a gay bar. There were a bunch of homosexuals, and they all got killed. Good for them. Really? That's what a Christian concludes? Better back up just a step or two on that one. We live in a cruel world. Cruel, cruel world. This world ought to be seeing something better from us. I think it's fair to say, when you read the scriptures, that Jesus was much more sympathetic with prostitutes and sinners than he was with the religious Jews. The religious Jews made him sick. And Jesus even said, unless our righteousness exceed the Jews, the Pharisees, we're not going to make it. So I chose to talk about this because it's not our place to be angry with sinners. That is not our place. Be angry at our brother because he's done wrong. It is our place as God's people to love what our Father does for those that have come back. Have you ever come back? Let me back up and ask it this way. Are you gone? Are you in a far country? Yeah, you can be sitting in this building. That don't mean you're back home. Maybe you need to come home. You know the Father's looking for you. He can see a long ways down the road. If you come back, he'll see. He'll greet you. He'll run towards you. He'll hug your neck. He'll forgive you. How much more hog slop are you going to have to breathe to open up your senses, to come to your mind about what you need to do? But maybe you're here. And we're looking down our noses at people that are so, so inferior to us. Brethren, I sure hope that ain't in our vocabulary. We don't need to be looking at anybody that way. Keep seeking things above. You know what that means in this context? Why not love sinners the way our Father does? That doesn't mean when we love sinners that we any more condone the wrong that they do than God does. By loving them does not mean that God condones what they do. You know, our LGBT lesbian, gay, bisexual, transgender community, that's a sinful deal. Well, let's don't jump on the bandwagon of hate. Let's not jump on the bandwagon that they got killed. Yes, great. No. That's not our place. These Jews hated the sinner. They didn't want anything to do with them. They didn't even like Jesus, but they didn't want him to have anything to do with them. My sister is a lesbian. She left her husband and she flew the coop. She's still far off in a foreign country, spending loosely and living wild and crazy. And I debated a long time whether to say anything about that, knowing that this is recorded in YouTube and whatever else y'all doing out there in the technical world. I'm hoping maybe one day she Googles my name and this pops up. Let me tell you something. I don't hate my sister. I love my sister. And I want to be with her and talk to her and try to help her come back to the Lord. She drew a line in the sand. I'll get with you and I want you to be my brother, but don't mention anything about God. Don't mention anything about church and don't mention anything about my lifestyle. And I said, Trish, I can't do that because I love you too much. I want to be with you, but I will mention God to you lovingly and kindly for you to come back to repent, to do what's right. I'm not going to hit you. I'm not going to kick you. I'm not going to be mad at you. I don't hate you. I love you. You're my sister. But you're living in sin. God will forgive you, but you got to give it up. You got to quit. If you can't handle that, I don't know what to tell you. You know what she decided? There's no communication. She's gone. She left. I just hope and pray that when she hits bottom, she will. She will have the opportunity from the mercy and the kindness of God. Smell the pig slime. Have one more chance to come to her senses. Right after my folks died, she did that. I was already at rock bottom. When she did that, it just dug the hole deeper. There for a while, I didn't have a lot of good feelings for her. And then I read this story. And I've read this story. And I keep reading that story. And I have to really make sure that I come down off my highest high place. And I hope and pray that she comes back to her phone. And ask for forgiveness. And when she does, I hope and pray that I will receive her back as God does. I know that there's other people in this audience that have the same kind of struggles. Whether it's marital problems, it's kid problems, grandkid problems, whatever it is. This story applies to us. May God Almighty help us to love the lost the way our Father loves the lost. Thank you for listening. Take your song books and open to the selection. We're going to sing a song to encourage any and all to come back to the Father. when you read that story, do you try to put yourself into the prodigal's shoes? Well, technically, when he came back, he didn't have any, evidently. But do you try to put yourself there? Can you even fathom how he must have felt when his father come running down that road? Do you think maybe for a split second, here comes my daddy, he's going to kill me? Maybe he thought that? Well, his dad keeps running toward him. And soon he's close enough he can tell that he ain't going to kill him, not carrying a hatchet or anything. But he's running toward him. And maybe his father has tears in his eyes. Maybe he's smiling. You ever been in that situation where you cry and smile at the same time? Do you think that father was crying and smiling at the same time? And he comes, and he just puts his arms around that boy's neck. Have you ever been that boy? I just think he had to feel so much relief. Do you think he ever thought about the father saying, get out of here, boy, I don't want to see you again? I bet he thought about that. Your father ain't going to say, get away from here, boy, I don't want to see you no more. Your father's going to say, it's so good to see you. I love you so much. I don't care what you've done. I forgive you. Don't you need to come back to the Father? Isn't that you? Won't you come? Just stand and sing.